Hey, it's Karen Hunter from The Karen Hunter Show on SiriusXM Urban View. Here's a highlight from today's show.
Let me welcome back to the show, Dr. Keisha Porchar. Hello.
Hi, everyone. What's up? Listen, you know it's an amazing person if I'm giving a 5th anniversary date on the island for you, but that's what we do for OGs. So I am super excited to be here.
We could have waited until you came back, you know. We would have waited a week or something. I don't know.
Do you see how my husband is harassing you on Twitter? You think he's going to let me wait?
Well, I don't see, because I'm like, I quit Twitter after they let that thing happen to me for a minute. I'll be back probably on Friday, but I'm taking a beat trying to figure out how I want to engage with this platform now. And I'm in Nubia, chilling with the Nubians during the break. So I feel like I don't really need to be there except to announce certain things. But yeah, so first of all, congratulations. Happy anniversary. Happy anniversary
Thank you.
To you.
Year 7.
Wow. So year this is 7. The year of completion.
Tell me more. Tell me more.
I don't know. Just you've completed. Now y'all going into a new phase. But I feel like this is also blessed with the new baby. So y'all had a baby since the last time I saw you.
We've had a baby born at 26 weeks.
Oh,
so
my God.
His name is Cairo Maximus. They say it's a micro preemie, but it has been a journey. And when I tell you, like, I have been saying this for a while, but I grew up with my grandmother and she used to always have these sayings that I didn't really understand when I was a kid. But my grandma used to always say, you'll understand it better by and by. And going through this journey, I have understood some things that she has said to me, like becoming a mom and like all of your plans. And I'll tell you something that's so crazy. The last time I was on here, I can see her. She goes by something Maven. She was on the show.
Oh, Glow Maven. Yes.
Maven. Glow Maven. She was talking about birthing a baby.
Yes. Lathan Thomas.
That we were together. Yes. And I was like, why is she talking about this? I'm not thinking about no child. But at that time, all of that advice that she gave me or gave on the show, I used while having my son. So I developed preeclampsia with HELLP syndrome at 23 weeks. And it wrecked my body. I've never had any like former illnesses or anything. And so they had to take the baby early. And we have been on a journey ever since then. So I am thankful. I've seen God's miraculous power in my son's life and in my own life. And shout out to my Black doctor who saved my life, who said, you're going to stay here until you have this baby. And we're going to make sure that we bring both the baby and you earthside. So
because, you know, maternal mortality rates among Black women very high in this country, primarily not because of health, is primarily because of lack of care and because doctors do not respect the humanity of the Black bodies that they're in charge of. They don't believe when we talk about our symptoms, they're not going to be in the fight and roll up their sleeves. So having a doctor that not only understood it, but saw you as somebody worthy of fighting for and your baby means the world. So shout out to your doctor.
And listen, and he said a lot to me during that time. He was like, listen, one, he was the only Black doctor in the entire like pediatric and OBGYN ward. And he was there as a student. And he said, listen, everybody knows me. I'm going to be here every single day until that baby comes. He said, but my number one job is to keep you safe. And he was like, and to advocate for you. So no one makes a move without me. So you'll see me every day and I'll make a decision for you every single day that's best for your health. But I was also intentional about saying I wanted a Black doctor to birth my baby. And it took me a long time to find one that I was really comfortable with. But yeah, he said, my life.
Oh,
he definitely
my God.
Saved my life.
All right. Yep. Having little Cairo at 20, did you say 26? 26 weeks.
26 weeks.
What's been the biggest challenge in I'm sure he was in an incubator. I'm sure. Mm-hmm. 1 pound.
4.5 ounces. Yep.
Oh my God. A 1 pound baby. So he's not even wasn't as big as your hand.
Well, he long like my husband, so he was a little long.
Maurice is long. Okay, you're telling a lot.
Maurice is long. I think the biggest thing is still like advocating for your child. I think when people see me, one, like Karen said, what you got on? You got your braids. I got my colorful nails. They don't know who I am, right? And so when they come into the room, they don't treat Black patients well. And so then when I have to kick in and like show my privilege, like I have a PhD and I know how this works, is when I can get the care that I need for my son. But when I think about all the other women who I also had to advocate for when my son was in the NICU, like they didn't have the same cultural capital that I had, or they didn't know what to ask for. And that really was disheartening, because we know the things that we need to operate best in this country, but people don't listen to us just because of the color of our skin. And so it was very overwhelming. That piece is the most overwhelming, because once the baby comes home, you're still on a journey after that with, you know, doctor's appointments and just asking for things that you know you're supposed to have. And they're like, well, why are you asking for that? Or how do you know about that? I'm like, first of all, I know how to read, one, and two, I have friends who are medical doctors, right? And so that has been the biggest challenge, is just advocating for what my son needs. And of course, the emotional part of, you know, having a child early on top of that, right? So you need these things to keep your baby safe and well, but then you're fighting at every turn to make sure that it happens. So I think that has been one of the biggest challenges.
His birthday's coming up. And so is he perfectly healthy now? What have been some of the health challenges of being born 1 pound at 26 weeks?
Listen, there are so many things that happen in the NICU that people are not aware of. So my son was fine, like the entire time. It was me that was sick. But once he came to, like, once I would say after 2 weeks that he was here, you know, they took the intubation out because they have to intubate the babies early so that they can breathe. But my son was thriving and he was fine. And then all of the babies on our ward in the NICU were contracting, what do they call them? Infections. And so my son was one of those kids who contracted an infection. But when they're so small like that, they can't fight off small things that we would be able to fight off. So he contracted an infection that spread to his brain. He had no issues at first with his brain, spread to his brain, had a grade 4 brain bleed. And I'm telling all of our business. So Mo, I hope you're ready. Had a grade 4 brain bleed. And normally when you have that large of a brain bleed, they're like, you know, we don't know if you should make the decision to keep the baby. I mean, we were having a lot of critical conversations, but prayer changes things. And so we just wrapped our arms around my son. We started an email called Letters to Cairo, where prayers for Cairo, excuse me, where my friends and people all around the world sent prayers for my son. And literally 2 days before we checked out of the NICU, the brain bleed that my son had resolved itself. And that never, ever happens with that massive of a brain bleed. And so he is progressing, but we have a lot of physical therapy, a lot of occupational therapy just to keep him on track with his milestones. But it has been a journey. But to be honest, the prayer, like I have literally, you know, you have the prayers of your grandmother and they pray for you. But when you're going through your own stuff, you got to know how to pray for yourself. And so I had to understand God for myself and like access the ancestors and becoming a real mama bear for my child. So he is full of life and joy. He brings the swag and the dancing and the music to every room he comes into. But I cannot be dishonest and say that this has not been an emotional journey for both my husband and I. And we've had to lean into each other in ways that I never imagined. I never thought that my pregnancy journey, this is my first and only child, would be like this. But, you know, my friend always tells me that God anointed you and Mo to be Cairo's parents. And so he has given you all that you all need to take him through this journey of life. And I believe that.
Cairo, you named him Cairo. Why?
Because it means victorious. And at the time, I did not know that. So his name, Cairo Maximus, means victorious warrior. And he has indeed had to be that at every moment. Now that I think about it, my girlfriend's like, now do you want to take that name back up? I'm like, maybe. We have been war since he came here. But with like my faith, I believe that with my son, we have an automatic victory. No matter, you know, what doctors say, no matter what we face, I believe that we're always going to have an automatic victory. And I believe that my son has brought my friends who never prayed before, never even believed in a God. They look at my son and say, listen, I know that there's a God. I've seen God do something in your life. And so I believe that his purpose here is bigger than me and bigger than my husband, too. So that's what I'm standing on.
Yeah. All right. So it had nothing to do with your travels to Egypt.
Yes, So me and my husband, I would tell this story at the beginning of the pandemic. We were like, they were talking about the pandemic, but we didn't believe anything that the president at that time said. But Mo watches a lot of international news. And so he was like, Keish, something is happening. Like, I think we need to start wearing masks. And like, seriously, we were wearing masks before anyone was wearing masks. And so closer to the time before they shut everything down, my husband was like, we still gonna go to Cairo. Like, we going, like, we planned this trip, let's go. So we go to Cairo, we get there, and all of these people are waiting, like, we about to test y'all. We like, hold on, this is for real. Like, they just not taking this serious in the United States, but everybody else is taking it serious. So they let us get off the plane, they tested us and everything, but we had plans to go to different places throughout Egypt, but they were like, nope, we're grounding everybody in Cairo. I mean, we were in a great hotel in the Four Seasons, but I'm like, we wanted to move around. That's when we knew things were serious. And I told my husband, I said, listen, if we decide to have a kid in the next few years, we got to name him Cairo, because this has been like a life-changing experience. We did make it back to the US and we were fine. But yep, that's why we decided to name our son Cairo.
Wow.
And it was going to be Cairo, girl or boy.
And you weren't even pregnant then. And
No, I was not pregnant.
Cairo wasn't conceived. Okay. All right. Now let's
Cairo
move
was
on.
not
Let's move on.
conceived. Got it.
Dr. Keisha Porcher, how has the pandemic changed your view on education?
Ooh. I don't even think that the pandemic, to be honest, I feel like gave us an open gate. And I've heard you talk about this, to like really turn things into what they should have been, especially in education. And so at the beginning of the pandemic, you heard everybody saying, like, we're going to reimagine education. We're going to create something that really works for all students. But as soon as the buildings, the physical buildings, because I feel like schools were always open, but as soon as the physical buildings opened back up and they went back into the physical building, it was all of this conversation about, like, let's go back to what we had before. And so I'm questioning all of the folks, like, what happened to the reimagination? Like, what were we gonna do? I thought we were gonna do something different. And so for me, to be honest, and I'm gonna be transparent, I started off teaching all Black students in Prince George's County. Shout out to PG. And it was like my heart's work. I loved getting up, going to teach every single day. And so the challenges that I have now as a professor is very different, because all of my students are non-melanated, right? And so my research was very heavily focused on, like, how do we prepare non-melanated teachers to teach Black students? And it has been that for like the last 3.5 years. And prior to the pandemic, me and my best friend and a close friend, she's a faculty member too, Dr. Charmaine Bertrand, we were at a conference. This was pre-pandemic, and this is when I first started like this journey. One of the facilitators asked us, when you get free, how will you know you're there? And we all sat there and was like, what you talking about? She's like, you
All
know,
right,
we're
but
fighting for
pause,
free.
pause. I need everyone to sit in that question. When you get free, how do you know you're there? How do you know?
How will you know? She said, because we're spending so much time fighting, 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 fighting. When we get to the end goal, how will you know you're there? If you've never been free before, you don't know what it feels like, you don't know what it's like to experience it, how will you know you're there? And we all sat there like, well. So then she gave us a next assignment, to freedom dream. So if you can make schools whatever you wanted them to be like, educational spaces to be like, whatever you want it to be like, what would it be like? And we journaled, I want to say, for about 10 minutes, music playing, drums. And I sat with that and I said to myself, I said, you know what? Even the work that I thought I was doing to prepare non-melanated teachers to teach Black students, I was still centering whiteness. And I had to take a step back and say, I should really be focusing on what it means to center Blackness. And I had never really thought about that and what it would look like tangible. So me and my colleague, we were together and we started talking about it. And I was like, what would the classroom look like? You know, when you come in, would it be vibrant colors? Would you have music playing? Would drums be playing? Like, would kids be singing, engaging? Like, what would it look like? What would students be reading? What would they be learning about? And we just
Okay.
spent time
All right.
breaking
And
it down.
let me just 866-801-8255. We have a couple of people that want to talk to you about
Chat, okay.
your Cairo experience, not the one
Okay.
in Egypt, but the baby.
Okay.
But I want people to, I would love to hear the answer to that. When you're free, how will you know it? And then what are your freedom dreams? I just dropped that in Nubia. in the chat, because that's the question that drives me with everything that I do, because I am free and I know that I'm free
and I know
exactly why I'm free. And I know my freedom comes with some restrictions because I'm still in a world that may not see me as such. So I have to navigate their inconsistencies and their, you know, racism and all the other roadblocks and their insecurities. I have to navigate that because when you are free, you're going to automatically challenge the system. I had a conversation with a friend of mine recently, and it was like, you're moving in such a way that in nature, there's an equal and opposite reaction. That's physics, right? For every action, there's an equal and opposite. So the way in which you're moving, you're going to get equal and opposite reaction. You're going to get that opposition. So you got to expect that. You got to build that into your plan. Like, okay, I'm doing this. That means this is going to happen. So I have to now build in, you know, a reaction to that reaction and or a protection around myself and the things that I'm doing, because that is definitely coming. You're not going to go unmolested as a result, because you're shaking up, you're moving this, you're moving the framework. Literally, there's going to be a reaction. So that freedom dream is a it's the thing that drives me. Like, what does it look like on the other side of this? What does it look like 100 years from now? That's why I plan in advance.
Yeah.
Like, who are the people that are going to pick up the stuff that I'm laying down? So, tell me, give me one nugget of your freedom dream.
So me and my colleague, we actually came up with the Black Gaze framework, G-A-Z-E, for teacher education. Because we're like, okay, we're going to create a freedom dream. What do we want education to look like in this teacher education space? And so we started, the first thing that we started with, which is so like in tune with everything that you do. And we use Black language because it's just a part of who we are. But the first element that we have is just called honoring the OGs. Like, who are the elders and the people who have paved the way for us? And we call it the Black print, not the blueprint, but the Black print. So who can we study in education who have done this well? Like, and I think there's something for all of us to learn in terms of the educators who came before us, who was doing this work with less constrictions than what we have now. And they were successful with students. How do we study them intentionally? And not even just the famous people, like, who are the people or the community pillars that we can study too, who have been doing this for a long time? Like, for example, who is your vacation Bible school teacher? Like, what did he or she do? Like, what were those great things, that the ways in which they educated people, like back in the house with the people frying chicken in the front? Like, what did they do that kept students engaged, that kept students having fun, that had joy centered in the classroom? How do we honor them and bring that into the classroom is the first thing that we started to study. And so we just started talking our grandparents, like people in our community. My grandmother, I call her the community police. My grandmother knew every single person in the hood where we grew up. She came to every bus stop to make sure every kid got on the bus. You didn't go to the bus, she calling your mama and say, such and such was not at the bus stop. I saw her walk up the street, right? There is something to learn from her. Like, why is it that no kid ever went like toe-to-toe with my grandma? Like, Miss Bev, I ain't going to school. No, they got their butt right on the school bus, right? There's something that we can learn from those people too that should be centered into our classroom experiences. And I think the second thing that we talked about too in this Black Gaze framework, and this is something that I hear Drew talk about too a lot on this show, is like sharing our stories. Like, even me sharing my story about my son being born early, Black women go through so much on this pregnancy journey, but sometimes it's so hush hush. We don't have critical conversations about it. So even in the classroom, in what ways are we elevating our experiences? Like, what were the ways that we learned best? How do we bring that into the classroom? Because so many times when you're a Black teacher, they tell you to turn off your language. You can't dress that way. You can't show up that way. But those stories, those, the ways that we embody Blackness, they have to be invited into the classroom too. And so we have to be open to sharing our stories about who we are and not being ashamed of it. Like, to be proud of the complexities of Blackness is so important. But I feel like, especially when, like you said, like that opposition, when we're still operating in a space that it does not center Blackness, you're going to have that opposition. They're going to say, why are you sharing your stories? And why we got to hear one more thing about some Black person? No, you got to celebrate that. So we're really, really big on that. I'm just kind of going through the framework. The third thing that we love to do is we add in preaching points. Like, I think a lot of educational frameworks, we talk about all of the challenges we have, but we never move to that big piece, that follow through. So what are we going to do about it? All right, so we know we have these challenges. How are we going to fix it? Not that it has to be a quick fix. So we have incorporated the Black church in there. Like, so what are our three preaching points about a topic that we're talking about that we can give people like some tangible things that they can do? So people are always saying, like, hit us up. What should I be doing with my kid over the summer? Okay, do your kid know how to swim? You need to get them into a swimming lesson. Have you taken them to the library? Do they have a library card, right? What free activities are going on in your school? Like, giving them some concrete things that they can do as opposed to making things so large that people can't access it, right? And those things should be invited into any classroom space. The fourth thing that we do is we call what you doing with your life. Like, so what you reading, what you listening, what you watching in your life that centers Blackness that can also be invited into the classroom. So me and my girlfriend, we got a group chat about P-Valley, right?
I was gonna ask you if P-Valley was on the list. See, now hold on. Dr. Porcher is here. And you can follow her at Dr. Porcher, P-O-R-C-H-E-R. Yep. I called you Porsche because Nikki Porsche spells her name the same way.
Says that's how you pronounce it, but come on, y'all. They can't barely get Porcher right. So I just stick to Porcher, okay? Right. I'm a former Woods. That's pretty easy. So go ahead.
Okay. P-Valley, I was just writing for Friday because, you know, I have a what to watch list. And there's some ratchet stuff on there. Like, I have all the Queen's Men, which are AKA Big Dicks and Bad Acting. And I watch that because it is like Family Guy. It's so cartoonish that it has me crack. Like, it's hilarious. The writing is bad. The acting is bad. Like, everything is so horrible.
I keep hearing people talk about that.
Oh, my God. But
it's
so bad. It's delicious. It's so bad. It's like, it's so stupid and ridiculous that it makes me laugh, right? So it's my joy. P-Valley is not that. It is good acting and good writing.
Good writing.
It is forcing me to be involved with people I would never be involved with normally, right? So I wouldn't know an Uncle Clifford in my regular life. I wouldn't know Mercedes. And this season, they have gone away from the one bad actor, the one person that can't act, and I didn't believe her at all, to focus on Mercedes.
Everybody,
And Keyshawn and Lil Murder, who we know. We know a Lil Murder. But that man, this season, and his relationship with Uncle Clifford is so complex. And he's a complex, like, we're seeing layers. And I'm like, none of these people would I ever know. But now I have compassion and insight that I wouldn't have normally. And that's important.
I think those people exist in my family, like where I grew up.
You got an Uncle Clifford in your family?
I don't have an Uncle Clifford, but I got a Lil Murder for sure. But understanding, like, I always talk to my colleagues about how much Black people have to give up to be in non-melanated spaces, right? But like, when I go home to visit my family, I'm going to the projects. Like, that's where they all live, right? So I'm gonna see a gamut of folks that I'm gonna engage with, right? And so those people have taught me so many things that have made me the great educator that I am, who have taught me how to move through the world, like, as my husband would say, with my head on a swivel, right? And so those skills I bring into spaces, but you would never know that because those things aren't invited into classroom spaces. And we always talk about this in our framework, like, all Black people have to be included, not just the respectable ones, the Lil Murders, the Keyshawns. They all have to have an opportunity to be free. Now, their freedom might look different from yours, right? Doesn't make yours right, it might wrong, and vice versa. But I think those are the critical conversations that we have to have in educational spaces. It can't just be the kids who show up with everything organized. They say yes every time you ask them a question. They do their homework on time. No, the ones who come in cracking jokes, talking about you, they gotta go too. We have to find a way to reach them too. And I don't think we talk enough about that.
No, and let me just say, in addition to that, Dr. Porcher, and you have a podcast which somebody dropped in Nubia. So thank you, R.A. Mills in Nubia, the Black Gays podcast. The compassion that you have to have in the multidimensional way, like you said, you know, most art, most TV shows, you know, you got the drug dealer, you got the, you know, you got the stripper, you got the, you know, the transgendered guy, you know, and they're like one dimensional, and they're like, there's neck popping and finger snapping, and, you know, they're going to be hitting a pole. But what P-Valley has done is give you dimensions and layers. Like Keyshawn, M-I, crooked letter I, actually comes from a well
A
off,
very good family.
right, a well off. Her father was well off. Like there's like you and the white boy that she married is abusive, and you're like, oh, she's in a situation that many women find themselves in. But there's a flip to it, and there's like an entry point where you can have a heart. Like Little Murder first season, I was like, eh. Now I'm like, how he treated
Whoa.
Little Clifford's grandmother, Ernestine.
Took care
Shout
of
out to,
her.
oh my gosh, shout out to Loretta Devine, who was playing her, I mean, one role that she's barely in. You know, I mean, it's just to me the kind of compassion we should have for each other, which we don't. We see people on the street, oh, that person's got their pants sagging, they're a criminal. They got a hoodie on, that's the thug. This person, oh, she's a thot because her booty cheeks are out. But everybody's got a story, an origin story that is way more than just what we see. That's important.
But that's so important. I think that's what we need to understand about teaching and learning. It's all about centering humanity. Listen, I could tell you all of my students' stories, and when I see them in the future, it doesn't surprise me. You know, just based on the experiences that we've had, they were great students because I provided space for them to just be. And I think the one thing that I've learned the most, even with my own family, like I told you how I grew up, is like my job as a teacher is to cultivate your genius. Shout out to Goldie Muhammad. It's not to turn you into who I am. That's not the purpose of
Wow.
educating, right? It's how do I take your gifts, whatever they are? How do I cultivate that in my classroom space? That's what teaching and learning is about. And guess what? If they decide to become a Keyshawn, listen, that's their journey. I've done my part, but it's not for me to say, okay, I want you to have this middle class lifestyle. I want you to go to college, because I always tell people all the time, the reason why I have gotten as far as I have gotten is because I assimilated. And I got to be honest about that, right? Like, I was like, okay, you want me to do that? That's what I need to do to get by. But the most brilliant people that I've taught and that I've been in classes with, they were the people who didn't assimilate. And I'm just keeping it 100.
Yes, 100. Let's go to Zachary in Philly. We got a couple of minutes, and then you're going to keep you on. Hi,
Okay.
Zachary. Welcome. Thank you for holding.
Hi. Hi, Karen Hunter. Hi, Doctor. Thank you for taking my call.
You're welcome.
I want to speak on your son, Cairo. Is that correct?
Yes.
So I have a daughter. Her name is Kennedy Gabrielle Cross.
Hi,
Her birthday
Kennedy.
is tomorrow, August
Oh.
10th. She was born 2006 of 15 ounces at 26 weeks.
Wow.
Wow. Wow. You know what? I needed to hear that. Like, shout out to Kennedy, one. And happy early birthday, because when I hear stories like this, it's a reminder that we're going through, but we'll get to the other side. So thank you so much for sharing her. And I hope that she is healthy, whole, and complete.
She will be 16 years old.
Wow.
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 I, as everything you spoke on, we went through. I'll give you the elevator story version of it. Wife during pregnancy, they already knew she was high risk. Next thing you know, blood pressure was running high, and then we learned about preeclampsia. Then she went to the doctor for a routine. The doctor said, "You're going to the hospital right now." She was in the hospital for over a month holding Kennedy, and then they had to do an emergency, say, "Hey, you gotta come." So the day she was born, or that night, the doctors did not want to move forward. They said, "We don't think she'll make it." We said,
Wow.
No, we're
Look.
going to move forward." And but they came to us prior, and they wanted us to make a decision, and we made the doctors and the nurses and everything leave the room, and
Zachary,
they were
we are
prepared.
going to get cut off by the man, but I just want to, again, happy early birthday. Thank you for sharing a bit of that story, and I'm so grateful that 16 years later, can't nobody take anything away from that journey. All right, we were talking about a bunch of things. That freedom question that you asked, and then how you're framing teaching, because what people don't know is you teach teachers how to teach us. That's your job. You teach
That's my
teachers how to
job.
teach us. What has been the biggest obstacle? Because we're losing a lot of teachers now. A lot
We
of
are.
teachers during this pandemic were like, you know what? I don't get paid enough for this. I don't get paid enough for this. Now y'all want to bring polio into the classroom and monkeypox? Go ahead with all of this. I'm out. I can go on Google, sign up for one of them courses, make twice as much money. I could work at Walmart as a manager, make twice as much money. I don't need to do this. So how do you keep teachers engaged?
I think for me, the biggest thing I've been saying is like the pandemic has been like atrocious. I'm gonna just be honest. But the one thing that I've learned about teaching is you have to pivot. Not just, you know, when we have a global pandemic, but from class to class, you have to pivot, right? And so I've had some very hard conversations with my students about what they're entering into. And so we do have students who are still like, this is what I want to do. It's what I've always wanted to do. And I'm excited to get started. And so I've really been working with them on flexibility. Like, what does the classroom look like when you can have something that changes where the majority of your students aren't here because they're ill, or you are ill and you have to be out? Like, how do you remain nimble in that space? And so I'm actually teaching a course this fall called Literacy and Technology. And so the biggest thing that I've been focused on is how do I teach my students now how to prepare for a space like this? And I think there were a lot of great things and pedagogical strategies that we adopted when there was remote instruction that should stay inside of the classroom, right? And so what are those things and how should we be exploring that? But I've also been talking to my students very critically about like, how do we define literacy, especially literacy for students now? It doesn't look the way that it looked when we were coming through school, right? And so some of the literacies that we're talking about is hip hop literacy and racial literacy and critical media literacy, right? Because our students are consuming so much and they don't come to us as empty vessels. Most of our students know how to work laptops better than us, know how to do these apps, do all these things that we are not aware of. And how do we make those things an element of the ways in which we teach? Like, it's so easy to say like, well, I want it to be the way that it was before. But like, you have students making more money than teachers on YouTube. Right? How do we keep them engaged? We have to find, I think about Gracie's Corner. I don't know if you're familiar with Gracie's Corner, but my son watches Gracie's Corner. It's a YouTube show started by a man and his daughter during COVID. Kids are always on YouTube, and he noticed that his daughter couldn't find any YouTube videos that had Black children in it. So they created Gracie's Corner, and they've created all of these different learning songs, counting and alphabet, and every song that we learned growing up, they just put it to a hip hop beat or a reggaeton beat. And my son, when I turn on Gracie's Corner, everything in my house stops. He's like, and he bobbing his head. He's not even one, right? And so like, how do we create that type of engagement inside of classrooms? So I've been telling my students like, websites don't work anymore. You probably need a YouTube corner now that your students can go to and watch videos of you teaching when they're not present. Like, we have to think on our toes. And yes, I'm learning too. Like, I had a TikTok page teaching my students on TikTok. They all on TikTok all day. I don't like TikTok. It's not my preference, but if they're on TikTok all day, I'm about to create some videos about the content. And when you scroll through your TikTok, you're going to see me on there teaching with my braids and my red lipstick, and you're going to get the education that you need. So I think that being nimble and pivoting to what our students are actually accessing each day is extremely important. And honestly, it's so much fun when you learn it, and it keeps you on your toes to know like, teaching ain't about you. It's not about what you loved when you were a teacher. No, it's about accessing the students again, cultivating the people who are in front of you. So what do they love? What do they like? And how do we use that as a springboard to teach them content?
I mean, you said something, a lot of things. We're talking with Dr. Keisha Porcher. She also has a podcast that you can check out. Tell us the name of it again.
Black Gaze podcast.
Black Gaze podcast. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. What is literacy? You know, I feel like everything we've been taught, first of all, needs to be reexamined, you know. Even how we're teaching about the history of this country and the history of other countries. And we don't teach the history of any other country, even though it's all interconnected, but we don't connect the dots for our students. But then we test them, and we're over the top on testing, but you're testing them about things that are either irrelevant or not really true. Right. Mm-hmm. And so what is literacy? What does it mean to be literate, to learn, to know things, when the system itself needs to be reexamined in terms of what it's teaching?
So I always think about this, like when I was coming up and like getting my teaching certification, it was like reading, writing, speaking, your ability to read, write, and speak. And that's just on a very simple, simple level, right? But I grew up with my grandmother. And when I tell y'all, my grandmother is one of the smartest people I know, but I didn't find out until I was an adult that my grandmother could not physically read, right? I didn't know that. So my grandmother had this thing with me where it made me feel special. When the mail came, my grandmother would say, Keisha Marie, get my mail and let's sit down and let's read it. And I would read it to my grandmother and tell her, oh, they want you to do this and do that. And then she would say, okay, Keisha Marie, let's practice your penmanship. And I would write out my grandmother's checks. Like, okay, these people, you got to pay them $100. So I was just so proud. Like I get to do, you know, this big girl thing that my other siblings didn't get to do. And then when I got older, my grandmother was like, you know, I never really read well, but I know you always love school. So I use you as a resource. And so when I started to think about literacy, I said, so are you telling me that my grandmother is not literate when she was smart enough to say, I got a granddaughter who knows how to read and I can make a game out of this thing, right? So it's not just about being able to physically read, like that is a skill that we want people to have, but how do you read the world that you live in? My grandmother is like in her almost, you know, touching 80 at this point, and she's been able to move through the world and live a full life. So do I say she's not literate because she doesn't know how to read? She's learned how to read her world in a different way. She's learned how to access resources. That's a skill, right? That most people don't know how to use, right? So I think that I've had to expand even my idea of literacy. Like there was no thing called critical media literacy when I was getting my teaching certification. What is that, right? But our students access so much media on their phones at the drop of a second. How do we teach them how to be critical about what they read? Like, how do they check sources to know if this is true or not? Like, one of my doc students, like, she says, like, Keisha, these kids use TikTok like it's Google. Like, mm-hmm. How do we teach them how to look at a source and say, like, this is not credible, right? And I had to sit back and say, whoa, I don't go to TikTok for anything that I want to know, right? But these kids do. And so we have to be thinking very critically. Like, hip hop is a form of literacy for children, too. How do we incorporate that into a classroom? So it has become much more cultural than it was previously. It's not just about reading, writing, and speaking. And I believe that as we continue on, literacy is going to continue to evolve depending on the world that we're living in.
Are you optimistic or and where, because I also read a stat that children that live in quote unquote inner cities fell behind several, like at least two grades during the pandemic and probably will never catch up. And they were already, because of the lack of access to the internet and other things, weren't doing their, you know, virtual learning.
But there's another okay, resource that my students are actually, I'm going to drop it like on Twitter when we're done. There's another resource that says that a lot of Black students also jumped reading levels during this pandemic. So it's like, who is your source, right? And then what are we using as the barometer, right? So even when we think about testing and we think about education, it's still centered on whiteness. It's based on the achievement of white students, right? We're not comparing Black students to other Black students because that's where the real work happens, right? We interview students on our pandemic. I mean, like all throughout the pandemic, we interviewed middle school students, we interviewed teachers, we interviewed high school students, and they said this is the safest they have ever felt being remote. That is something that we have to look at. They're like, I can, you know, look right to the left and talk to my mama about something that where I never had that access. So we can have those conversations. Do I believe that there are some students who are having some challenges due to the pandemic? Absolutely. But there are also some students who flourish in this environment. And those are the things that we need to be studying also, too. You even think about Black people at work. There are Black people who are saying, I don't want to go back into the office. I didn't feel safe. Right. But those aren't the articles that we're seeing. It's the learning loss articles that we're seeing about all the Black children who are behind. Mm. Right. And so I'm always looking to see, like, who wrote this? What's their agenda, right? Is it more testing? Is it more textbook purchases? Like you gotta dig deep, but I'm not also naive to think that kids aren't struggling and they want that access, but we have to learn from all of those spaces. We can't just use that one narrative because I wanna say, I'm gonna get the number incorrect, but we've been talking about this in our HBCU chats. I'm a graduate of an HBCU. HBCU enrollment has skyrocketed during the pandemic, right? It's so bad they don't even have enough housing for the students. That's how, I mean, it's not bad, but that's how good it has been. You don't hear anybody talking about that. But enrollment at predominantly white institutions are low, right? And they're saying, oh, we're students, you know, they just don't want to come back. But those are the studies we should be looking at. Like, why are all of these students now going to historically Black colleges? Do they feel safer now? Do they feel like they're going to get a different education? And so I think now when I look at those resources, I'm always looking for joy. And in what ways is this work centering Blackness? And is it from an asset perspective? Not that those things aren't important, but how do I make sure, like, in what ways is Blackness being centered and is humanizing in this particular work that you're putting out?
That should be foundational. 866-801-8255. Let's take a caller who's been holding on. Willie okay. in D.C. Dr. Keisha Porcher is here. Hey, Willie.
Hey, Willie.
Hello, everybody. Thanks for taking my call. First time calling. I appreciate it very much. I listen to you so as much as I can, and you're very good. And the conversations you are having today is very, very on point. I mean, I could have a lot of questions, a lot of comments, but I won't. But I wanted to say, Doctor, my heart goes out to Mr. Cairo, because I myself was born 7.5 months. I was born premature. I don't even think I weighed a pound. But I remember being in the hospital many, many times. I'm from the deep south, Louisiana. I'm talking about 1950. Okay?
Wow.
But here, 66 years later, I'm still here. And you're right. There is a God. There is a God.
Well.
And one more thing I want to say. I, too, when I go back to Louisiana, I, too, go to the projects. I do. Because I don't forget where I come from. I never do.
Nope.
And I try to help as many people as I possibly can. And I won't say any more, but I just wanted to say that my heart goes out to Mr. Calloway, because, like I said, I was born premature, 7.5 months.
Wow.
Thank y'all for y'all time, and appreciate y'all comments.
Thank you, Willie, for your patience, and don't be a stranger. Call back. Welcome to the call-in
Willie.
Family. Yeah, I mean, you already know, though. You already know that Cairo is going to be more than okay. And like you said, you got a lot of, not just prayers, but helping hands, and you are full, and you are abundant, and you have more than enough. So
I receive all that.
Yeah.
I receive all that.
And where you are now in terms of like what's next for you, in terms of helping set the framework for what's coming.
So the thing is too, and I want to say thank you, because I feel like when I think about the work that I'm doing, I can hear you. Like, my husband introduced me to you when I was still teaching high school. And I used to listen to you, like, when I was coming home from school. And I'm always thinking about, like, what am I doing? And my husband is like, you are supposed to do something bigger than what you're doing right now. So he's always pushing me. So coming up soon, I have a TED Talk coming up. I'm devastated about, like, I'm like, what if I, yeah, it's a whole thing. So that's coming up in September. But me and my girlfriend are really working on, like, I know 1,000 people have podcasts. But the one thing that we felt like was lacking is, like, there was no podcast in the educational space that was like just fun and giving resources and really focused on Blackness and joy and things that we can do to make education better. So we're focusing on growing that. It has become a part of our scholarship. We get grandmas who call us like, we listen to y'all podcast at church during our Bible study because it helped us think about this. And I mean, we talk about all the topics that are very challenging to talk about in Black communities, not just educational things, but just all things that we need to have more critical conversations about. So we're taking that show on the road at the conference is coming up soon. So we'll be doing that work. And then also our ultimate goal is to start a center for Black education, like where we can prepare pre-service teachers who want to teach Black students, to cultivate them into all the greatness that they're supposed to do and they should have access to. So that's like our big, big goal. So that's what we're up to. But for me, it's just taking it one step at a time. Like I have, through this whole process of my son, it has really made me think about my humanity in a very different way, but also making sure that I'm taking time to rest and to be still and to know that the revolution is also in your rest. So that's kind of where I am too.
Oh, I love that. I don't think we hear that enough. Those of us on the hamster wheel.
Yeah, that's been me.
Yeah, but without that, there's no balance, right? Mm-hmm. So you have to put as I look at the ocean and those palm trees behind you, you've understood the actual whole assignment, which is to take care of yourself as well.
Yep.
So thanks for giving us a little of your anniversary day. Give more Risa a hug from me and little Cairo. Tell them Auntie
K. And we have to keep in touch.
Yes.
Listen, I didn't get to see you at the show. I just want to take a moment and say, one, I know this sounds so crazy. I don't know if people tell you this, but I am so incredibly proud of the work that you do. And I'm just so grateful that I have been just like a little piece of it. But going to the lab event, like I hadn't laughed that much in so
hold
long.
Up. So I was so pissed off when you told me you were at Healthy Wealthy Wise. I mean, it's not Healthy Wise, that you were at Foolishness Friday Live a couple of Sundays ago and didn't even say hello.
I was in line. But as soon as we got to you, they were like, nope, we got to go. And I respect people's space and time. Like, I don't want to be there was an elder in front of me, and there was no way in my black life I was going to get in front of her to steal your time. No, but when I tell you, just to see like the manifestation of your work in many different spaces, it just shows, and for everybody listening, that we operate in a space of abundance. There's space for everybody to operate in their gifts, and you are operating in your gifts. I had so much fun. I laughed so hard, tears was coming out of my eyes. So I thoroughly enjoyed it. I can't wait for other opportunities, because we will be present and be there, because that also is a part of this journey, is centering joy, and we had a blast.
Let me tell you, we just got the final cut of what's going to be on pay-per-view on Saturday. I think we're launching it on Saturday. And I had a lot of fun. I had fun. So it was fun. It's like, if nobody else had fun, I had a good time.
And
the only regret I have is that I didn't get to hug more people. And, you know, like I did hug some people. So those of you, you know, because it was just, you couldn't help it. You know, such beautiful.
Yes, of course.
Such beautiful energy in the room. And everybody was
such great energy.
It was so good. Pinch the cheeks and say hello.
And
why
can't I think of her name? I can see her face right now, but it's just my mommy brain.
Who? Lorene?
She was performing one of the comedians.
Oh, B flat.
Oh my gosh. Gift.
Yes.
A gift.
Yeah.
Oh my.
Yeah. She did all the things, including playing a whole ass trumpet. I was like, what else can she do? I mean, but her comedy was, it was everything I didn't expect and then more. So I appreciate you and Maurice traveling with everything and coming to New York, and everybody that got on an airplane from and got there just to be there. I mean, I was
amazing.
Floored and humbled, and just love us. I love us. So
yes,
thank you.
Me too.
Thank you.
We'll be
Keisha.
In touch.
All right. Yeah. Happy anniversary and happy mamaversary. Yes.
Thank you.
Happy birthday, Cairo, in a couple of weeks.
Hey, this is Karen Hunter. You can listen to The Karen Hunter Show live every Monday through Friday at 3 p.m. East on SiriusXM Urban View Channel 126 or anytime on the SiriusXM app.